one of the details in today's gospel is that Jesus asked his disciples to get a boat ready for him so that he wouldn't be crushed by the crowd. What we see here is the growing popularity of Jesus and the growing demand from the people, largely for healing. You could imagine that when he got in the boat, the people who wanted to touch him would be quite disappointed because there's no way to reach him if he's in a boat. There's an instruction for us there. You see, it's not that we are forcing ourselves upon God, or we can change his mind by making our demands. He has come and he offers healing, but the more dramatic and more visible gifts of physical healing are not the main point. What can he do from a boat? Well, he could also heal from a boat if he wanted to, but mainly he would teach. He was healing the spirit by the power of the word. He was overcoming ignorance by his teaching. Yes, he came to heal, but the healings were, even though they were good in themselves, were also signs of the greater work he was sent to do. The overcoming of sin, the establishment of the kingdom of God. I'd like to reflect a little bit on the three main characters in today's first reading, in light of what Jesus came to do, that is, establish the kingdom and overcome sin. We can see practical implications of this, even though this is way before Jesus came, in the lives of Saul, David, and Jonathan. Actually, this week we are given in a condensed form, the story of the downfall, the rise and fall of Saul and the rise of David. We know Saul was chosen by God, but before long he fell away. He did not obey the Lord. He took on himself a position that was, he was exalting himself and not following the Lord. So the Lord told him through Samuel, well then you can no longer be king. Now, we're reading from the first book of Samuel here, and we're skipping over a lot of the details. But Saul, by the time we get to this passage, has already been told that he's rejected, and he can already see that David is anointed, that he has God's favor. So this passage is not the beginning of Saul's downfall. It's part of a progressive deterioration. What triggers Saul in this passage is the song that the women are singing, the jubilant song of celebration at the victory over the Philistines. It's a song. It's poetic expression of joy. It's not literal. David didn't really kill 10,000s. He killed the Philistine. And then the Israelite army killed thousands of Philistines. So it was never meant to be a literal description of how many soldiers Saul killed and how many soldiers David killed. It was just exuberance. And songs are like this. I mean, songs say, "Oh, this is the greatest day of my life." It's not necessarily the greatest day of my life, and she's not really the most beautiful woman in the world. That's just an expression. I remember when I was in high school, our school song, one of the lines in our school song was, "The greatest school in all the land." Well, we sang that, you know, every time we had a pep rally or something, "The greatest school in all the land." And we all knew it wasn't the greatest school in all the land, but no one ever objected to the song. It's just a way of drumming up some enthusiasm. Okay, so that's the point of the song, but you see, Saul already vulnerable because he's already outside the will of God. He's not depending on God. He's focused on himself. He takes this song as a personal offense. And the description of him is quite clear. He was very angry and resentful, and he was jealous of David. So anger, resentment, and jealousy, kind of a triple threat to his spiritual life. Let's focus on jealousy because this is the dominant one, and jealousy is what moves him to want to destroy David. Jealousy is a tricky sin. It's related to envy, you know, the deadly sin of envy. In fact, many people speak of envy and jealousy kind of interchangeably, which is okay, but technically they're like two sides of a coin. Jealousy is that self-preservation. I want to keep the good that I have. I'm afraid of someone else encroaching on what I have or my territory. Envy is the other direction. I'm envious of the good that someone else has. So if David wanted to be king, he could be accused of being envious of Saul. But David was not envious, he was just doing the will of God. But Saul, who is already king, is afraid of losing what he has. That's jealousy. Jealousy. Both of them, both envy and jealousy, are serious disorders because they are rejecting something good. They are sadness at or anger about something that's objectively good. It's good that David is successful. It's good that God has blessed him. It's good that he's victorious. That's not something to be sad about or angry about or feel threatened about. It's objectively a good thing, not only for David, but for the whole nation. Same with envy. Envy sees someone else rising or being blessed, and we feel sad. Well, that's not really a right response. And the reason why we call it a deadly sin is because it starts small with a little, just something bothers us, and then it grows and starts to infect. It's like cancer. It starts to spread to the other organs, and envy starts or jealousy starts to move us toward more anger, and then vengefulness, revenge, and then also violence, hatred. It spawns all these other sinful responses. Now, as with all sin, the important thing to do, if we don't want to fall into it, is to catch it early. This is true of all sin, all temptation, in fact. The quicker we can identify it and reject it, the better. So think of any sin, of whatever, anger, lust, gluttony, pride, envy, sloth, whatever you want to choose. They all start small. They are like seeds. And if we allow them to remain, then they grow. And this is exactly what David does. He hears the song. The right response would be, that's just a song. Or isn't that great? David was victorious. In fact, the antidote to jealousy and envy is gratitude. Gratitude, a deliberate decision of gratitude. Thank you, Lord, for this good thing. Even though I'm not the one who received it, I'm grateful that you've given it to anybody because we're one body. We all benefit when God blesses anyone. So if God blesses my opponent, thanks be to God. God blesses me, thanks be to God. That's the... Anyway, so if we catch it, the quicker we catch it, the easier it is to resist it because it's still small. But if we let it grow, and this is already a sin, to allow a sin to remain in the heart, then it gets harder and harder to resist. That's Saul. We're going to see Saul as I say, this is a condensed version of the story. Tomorrow we'll see Saul and David in a conflict, and David will be merciful to Saul, and then by Saturday, Saul and Jonathan are already dead in battle. So they're not going to get much more. But so that's Saul struggling with jealousy. Let's look at David for a moment. David, who is simply responding to the will of God in the moment. We know from the passages already that he trusts in God. Yesterday he put his whole trust in God in fighting against the Philistine, Goliath. And he's just responding to the call of the moment. Jonathan tells David, "My father is trying to kill you." Now that puts David in an awkward position, because you either have to run away or you have to fight. Because you can't just let a person kill you. So Jonathan says, "Well, wait a minute, let me figure out how this will unfold." Jonathan does his testing of the waters, and then he finds out, we'll get to him in a minute, but he finds out that Saul has changed his mind. And then he tells David, "Come on back, my father is not going to kill you after all." And it says here at the end of the reading, Jonathan brought David to Saul, and David served him as before. Now, it might seem like an insignificant detail, but that's a very courageous thing to do on David's part, to put himself in the presence of a man whom he knew was previously intent on killing him. So again, there's David trusting in God. David is not a perfect figure, as we'll see next week, and we know he has his own weaknesses and sins, but his greatness is he trusts in God. His heart really, really belongs to God. Even if his flesh is weak, his inner life is really for God, and this is a small example of it. So we see the contrast of Saul, who is jealous, David, who is basically abandoning himself to the protection of God. The third one here is Jonathan, not as well known, but a very beautiful example of selfless love. Jonathan is the son of the king, so he would expect, and everyone would expect him to succeed Saul on the throne. But Jonathan is not out for his own advantage. This selflessness is quite striking, especially so early on. This is long before Jesus taught us to love our enemy or to love put love of neighbor ahead of self. But here's Jonathan, who's basically putting David ahead of him, and he approaches his father. Knowing he knows his father, this is the cleverness of Jonathan. He doesn't try to use a high argument with Saul and say, "What you have in mind is wrong, and it goes against the will of God." He says, "You're going to harm yourself." Kind of appeals to Saul's own self-centeredness and saying, "Don't sin, because you're only harming yourself. You were happy when David slew the Philistine, and so why make yourself guilty now?" And it works. Saul is still sane enough to listen to reason. So Jonathan is clever. He knows human nature. But the most extraordinary thing about Jonathan is that he acts out of love for his father and love for David at his own expense. Talk about someone who puts his trust in God. Jonathan is putting his trust in God and doing what is good for those whom he loves. It's good for Saul to calm down his jealous anger, his violence. It's good for David that he's not be under the threat of Saul. And Jonathan, heck, If David had been killed, Jonathan would have no rivals. But that's not what Jonathan thinks. He really lives out his trust in God. In fact, this is the psalm response we repeated: "In God I trust; I shall not fear." It's David is the one who we attribute the psalms to. So we say this is David saying, "In God I trust; I shall not fear." But it's also Jonathan who's trusting in God and not fearing that he'll be surpassed or that he'll be rejected. He just does what is good for the other. It's a beautiful example of selfless, of sacrificial love.